Task 1. You are going to hear a radio interview with a young, well-known artist. Listen to the interview and mark the statements below, 1 to 10, with T if they are true, F if they are false, and NS if the information is not given. You will hear the recording twice. Now you have 30 seconds to look through the items. Now we begin.
Here with us today is Connie Stewart, who at just 19 is one of the country's most promising young artists. Our listeners have sent in questions to Connie, but first, Connie, can you tell us how you first took up painting?
Well, art lessons at school weren't too serious. I wasn't that bothered because I was busy with other subjects. A trip to an art gallery with my grandparents sparked my interest, and I did a huge amount of useful research online. I was self-taught, really. My family weren't exactly enthusiastic and thought it was just a passing thing. No wonder, really, because I tended to get bored with things quickly.
Ella has emailed to ask what sort of art has influenced the way you paint.
Well, I started out doing portraits, and it was cartoons that inspired me originally. People are surprised by this because they think of cartoons as unrealistic and over the top. Actually, the work that goes into them can be underestimated. Anyway, the best cartoon characters have remarkably expressive faces, which is what fascinated me and made me want to do the same in my paintings of people.
Another question here from Max. What sort of place do you work in?
I do all my painting in the attic, because that's the only place I can spread out my things whenever I get the inspiration, which can be at any time, night or day. It goes without saying that I need peace and quiet, because other people and their chatter, even if it's amusing, interrupt my train of thought rather than inspire me. I often have paper all over the floor, and I paint with my fingers and hands, so it's a really messy process. I think anyone who saw it would think it was just chaos, but underneath all that, there's an order and a system.
There's a text here from Anna, who'd like to know what you're trying to do when you paint.
For lots of young painters, having fun from start to finish is what matters, right from coming up with the idea to showing everyone your painting. I've usually found painting hard work, to be honest. I sort of knew I was just copying other people's style until I got more experience, so being different's never been a big deal. I wanted to transform the ordinary, boring things you can see everywhere so that they looked beautiful. I don't worry about being accurate.
Tom wants to know why your paintings don't have titles.
Oh, well, I'm always afraid that a title can give away too much. I like people to have to think about what they see and speculate. What they think doesn't have to exactly reflect my ideas. Everyone can make up their own stories about the individuals or events in the picture. That's how it can stimulate the viewer's imagination. Some people contact me with suggestions for names, but they're missing the point, really.
Francesca asks whether it bothers you when people don't like your paintings.
Some people are too polite to say anything critical, though I think that those artists who say they're not worried about getting negative comments shouldn't be believed. I take a different approach. I aim to be my own worst critic, because I know myself better than anyone else. Other people's opinions don't tell me much. I can see exactly where I've gone wrong and spot things nobody else noticed.
And finally, a question from Alexi. How do you feel about the exhibition of your work, which opens next week?
Well, actually, there's going to be paintings by other young artists, so it's not just me in the spotlight, which actually suits me. I'm afraid this exhibition hasn't been advertised much, because the local newspapers prefer reporting music and sport. At the exhibition, there'll also be a chance for people to pick up a brush and have a go. I think even if you're not confident or have never been encouraged much to do art, this may inspire you.
Now you have 30 seconds to check your answers. Now, listen again.
Here with us today is Connie Stewart, who at just 19 is one of the country's most promising young artists. Our listeners have sent in questions to Connie, but first, Connie, can you tell us how you first took up painting?
Well, art lessons at school weren't too serious. I wasn't that bothered because I was busy with other subjects. A trip to an art gallery with my grandparents sparked my interest, and I did a huge amount of useful research online. I was self-taught, really. My family weren't exactly enthusiastic and thought it was just a passing thing. No wonder, really, because I tended to get bored with things quickly.
Ella has emailed to ask what sort of art has influenced the way you paint.
Well, I started out doing portraits, and it was cartoons that inspired me originally. People are surprised by this because they think of cartoons as unrealistic and over the top. Actually, the work that goes into them can be underestimated. Anyway, the best cartoon characters have remarkably expressive faces, which is what fascinated me and made me want to do the same in my paintings of people.
Another question here from Max. What sort of place do you work in?
I do all my painting in the attic because that's the only place I can spread out my things whenever I get the inspiration, which can be at any time, night or day. It goes without saying that I need peace and quiet, because other people in their chatter, even if it's amusing, interrupt my train of thought rather than inspire me. I often have paper all over the floor, and I paint with my fingers and hands, so it's a really messy process. I think anyone who saw it would think it was just chaos, but underneath all that, there's an order and a system.
There's a text here from Anna, who'd like to know what you're trying to do when you paint.
For lots of young painters, having fun from start to finish is what matters, right from coming up with the idea to showing everyone your painting. I've usually found painting hard work, to be honest. I sort of knew I was just copying other people's style until I got more experience, so being different's never been a big deal. I wanted to transform the ordinary, boring things you can see everywhere so that they looked beautiful. I don't worry about being accurate.
Mm. Tom wants to know why your paintings don't have titles.
Oh, well, I'm always afraid that a title can give away too much. I like people to have to think about what they see and speculate. What they think doesn't have to exactly reflect my ideas. Everyone can make up their own stories about the individuals or events in the picture. That's how it can stimulate the viewer's imagination. Some people contact me with suggestions for names, but they're missing the point, really.
Francesca asks whether it bothers you when people don't like your paintings.
Some people are too polite to say anything critical, though I think that those artists who say they're not worried about getting negative comments shouldn't be believed. I take a different approach. I aim to be my own worst critic, because I know myself better than anyone else. Other people's opinions don't tell me much. I can see exactly where I've gone wrong and spot things nobody else noticed.
And finally, a question from Alexi. How do you feel about the exhibition of your work, which opens next week?
Well, actually, there's going to be paintings by other young artists, so it's not just me in the spotlight, which actually suits me. I'm afraid this exhibition hasn't been advertised much, because the local newspapers prefer reporting music and sport. At the exhibition, there'll also be a chance for people to pick up a brush and have a go. I think even if you're not confident or have never been encouraged much to do art, this may inspire you.
Now you have 30 seconds to check your answers. This is the end of listening task one. Task two. You are going to hear an interview with a psychologist on a radio show. For questions 11 to 20, choose the best answer A, B, or C. You will hear the recording twice. Now you have 30 seconds to look through the items. Now we begin.
Here on The Human Side today, we're talking to psychologist Dr. Andrew Lin about apologizing and why we find it so hard to say we're sorry. Dr. Lin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Dr. Lin, we all know everyone makes mistakes and that no one is perfect. But why do we find it difficult to own up to our mistakes and then apologise for them?
There are different reasons for this, but perhaps the simplest one is that really no one likes to admit they're wrong. People also don't like being rejected, so they don't apologise because they're worried that the other person won't accept their apology.
So they're just happy to put up with a situation which they know is not right, rather than deal with it.
That's right. So, some people worry about the other person not accepting the apology, but others feel it is a sign of weakness to apologise. In both cases, people would rather not feel that way, so they just won't say sorry even to a friend or a family member if they have fallen out with them.
What are some of the other reasons we don't like apologising?
For some people, it's all about power and being in control. They think that if they apologise, they will lose that. Sometimes issues with apologising can be put down to experiences in a person's childhood. Perhaps a child was criticised a lot by their parents while they were growing up and felt they never lived up to their parents' expectations. As they get older, they can take two approaches to this to avoid all the negative associations from childhood. One is to try and avoid situations where they may end up having to apologise at all. This is a very difficult strategy to get away with because it is completely unrealistic. The other, simpler approach is to avoid admitting they have made mistakes or come up with excuses time after time not to apologise.
So, what is the best way to overcome issues like this?
It's quite simple, really. The person who is wrong needs to ask for forgiveness from the person who is right. Apologies are difficult, but they are also a good way to build relationships and to stop relationships breaking down completely. The hardest thing for us is to admit that we've hurt someone's feelings or caused them emotional pain. We then need to take responsibility for our actions and deal with it. If we don't do this, we won't be able to go on and have good relationships.
Isn't that easier said than done?
Yes, it is, but if everyone decided they weren't going to take responsibility for things they had done wrong, or find the time to get round to apologising for their mistakes, we'd all be in a bit of a mess. There would be a lot of mistrust amongst people, and we probably wouldn't have many friends.
That doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. Apologising is all about showing the people you love that you really do care. Admitting your mistakes and putting things right is far more important than being right all of the time.
Thank you, Dr. Lin.
Now you have 30 seconds to check your answers. Now, listen again.
Here on The Human Side Today, we're talking to psychologist Dr. Andrew Lin about apologising and why we find it so hard to say we're sorry. Dr. Lin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Dr. Lin, we all know everyone makes mistakes and that no one is perfect. But why do we find it difficult to own up to our mistakes and then apologise for them?
There are different reasons for this, but perhaps the simplest one is that really no one likes to admit they're wrong. People also don't like being rejected, so they don't apologise because they're worried that the other person won't accept their apology.
So they're just happy to put up with a situation which they know is not right, rather than deal with it.
That's right. So, some people worry about the other person not accepting the apology, but others feel it is a sign of weakness to apologise. In both cases, people would rather not feel that way, so they just won't say sorry even to a friend or a family member if they have fallen out with them.
What are some of the other reasons we don't like apologising?
For some people, it's all about power and being in control. They think that if they apologise, they will lose that. Sometimes issues with apologising can be put down to experiences in a person's childhood. Perhaps a child was criticised a lot by their parents while they were growing up and felt they never lived up to their parents' expectations. As they get older, they can take two approaches to this to avoid all the negative associations from childhood. One is to try and avoid situations where they may end up having to apologise at all. This is a very difficult strategy to get away with because it is completely unrealistic. The other, simpler approach is to avoid admitting they have made mistakes or come up with excuses time after time not to apologise.
So, what is the best way to overcome issues like this?
It's quite simple, really. The person who is wrong needs to ask for forgiveness from the person who is right. Apologies are difficult, but they are also a good way to build relationships and to stop relationships breaking down completely. The hardest thing for us is to admit that we've hurt someone's feelings or caused them emotional pain. We then need to take responsibility for our actions and deal with it. If we don't do this, we won't be able to go on and have good relationships.
Isn't that easier said than done?
Yes, it is, but if everyone decided they weren't going to take responsibility for things they had done wrong, or find the time to get round to apologising for their mistakes, we'd all be in a bit of a mess. There would be a lot of mistrust amongst people, and we probably wouldn't have many friends.
That doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. Apologising is all about showing the people you love that you really do care. Admitting your mistakes and putting things right is far more important than being right all of the time.
Thank you, Dr. Lin.
Now you have 20 seconds to complete the task and transfer your answers to the answer sheet. This is the end of the listening task.